grateful to the organizers for the invitation to Girona. I'm going to talk about work that we've been doing at Durham calculating excited states, particularly charge transfer excited states, using TDDFT, not TDDMFT. So these are conventional calculations using TDDFT within the adiabatic approximation. Now, as Evian has said, when you do calculations using conventional GGA or hybrid functionals, your charge transfer excitations tend to come out far too low. And I want to show how you can use some extremely simple ideas to be able to predict when those failures will occur. And I'm also going to show you, relating to the talk by Kimihiko Tarao yesterday, how we can actually fix those problems in most cases, not necessarily in all the cases, as Evian has already said. And the emphasis in the talk isn't going to be on single excitations. I want to think about potential energy surfaces, because that's what's very important for understanding photochemistry, and also highlight some very recent work we've been doing, thinking about the character of the excitations. So everyone thinks there are problems with the charge transfer excitations. I want to show you there are also problems, same problems, due to the character of the excitations. Okay, so this is the picture you want to have in your mind. Okay, yeah, Diana's already given lots of plots like this. We're thinking about vertical excitations. I'm going to be computing these excitation energies. And when you do this with linear response TDDFT, this is the picture you want to have. Okay, so you're always thinking about it in terms of a rotation of the orbitals. You're rotating the occupied orbitals into the unoccupied orbitals. And from a chemical perspective, it's like taking an electron from this orbital and moving the electron into this orbital. And there's lots of plots like this during the talk. So you're moving electrons between orbitals. Of course, there are many occupied virtual contributions, often dominated by one, but bear in mind there are lots of contributions when you compute these excitations. And there you go, you look in the literature and people will talk about the well-known underestimation of these charge transfer excitation energies. And this is a typical molecule, one of the earliest systems. Take a charge transfer excitation and here, computed with B3 lip, you may have an error of 4 electron volts. So instead of giving you an excitation of about 8 eV, you might get about 4 eV. So it's catastrophically bad. But the reason we really became interested in this is occasionally in the literature, people would talk about charge transfer excitations that work very well. And this is one example. People would talk about the CT, the charge transfer excitation in DMABN, dimethylaminobenzonitrile, and TDDFT using conventional functionals works surprisingly well. So we wanted to try to understand and to try to help the user community to see when their calculations would be unreliable and when they would be reliable. That's really the idea behind the whole project. And the viewpoint we took for this goes back to some work by Andreas Roy and co-workers. They go back to 2003. And what they did was they looked at the extreme case of a charge transfer excitation between two molecules. The two molecules moving the electron from one across to the other. As those molecules get further and further apart, the orbitals involved in the excitation, so this is the orbital where the electron came from, and the orbital where the electron is going into, stop overlapping in space. And if you look at the TDDFT equations, then for a local functional like a GGA, they basically collapse. And the excitation energy just collapses to an orbital energy difference. The true excitation energy in that case is I minus A. It's the ionization potential of one minus the affinity of the other. That's what you're doing. You're just basically ionizing one and adding an electron to the other. And as Herav said yesterday, the orbital energies look nothing like I and A from these conventional local functions. There's Koopman's theorem in the building. Okay, so you have a very large error, a big difference, and that error can be understood as information in these two papers in terms of the integer discontinuity. But really what we tried to take away from this was the observation that when there is no overlap between the orbitals, the local functionals like GGA, failed miserably. Okay, so we thought to ourselves, can we use this in some way for a general excitation? Can we look at an excitation, see the extent to which the orbitals overlap, and if they don't overlap very much at all, is that when it goes wrong? Can we come up with some diagnostic for understanding this? So I had an undergraduate student, fourth year undergraduate, and we tried to do this. We defined a quantity, we just call it lambda, which just measures the extent to which the orbitals overlap. Okay, the orbitals involved in the excitation thinks about the extent to which they overlap. The value is between 0 and 1. So if you have a value of 0, okay, that means if you have a very small lambda, it means the electron is moving from an orbital over here to an orbital over here. Okay, and if the lambda is much larger, nearer to 1, it means you're exciting from an orbital over here to another orbital over here. Okay, we tried to see whether there was a correlation between the error and lambda. Okay, so here are some typical results taken from an earlier paper. Each one of these points is an excitation energy. This is the error in the excitation energy compared to our best reference values. This is the value of the overlap for that excitation energy. The color coding isn't particularly important today. Green means local excitations, red means Rydberg excitations, blue means charge transfer excitation. Okay, but really what it shows you, and this is what we're pleased about, is that when the overlap becomes very small, the errors become very large, and they're all far too low. And the extreme case is this molecule down here. Okay, this is an excitation in this dipeptide, and the orbitals just have no overlap whatsoever in space. The TD-DFT equations will completely collapse. Your error is 5 electron volts, and maybe a 7 eV excitation energy. And if you go to the other extreme, there's a blue pointer here, which is particularly interesting. This is a charge transfer excitation. It's in that molecule, DMABN. Okay, so in DMABN, we said the charge transfer works. And you're starting to understand now why the charge transfer excitation is working in there, because the excitation involves a pair of orbitals that don't have this problem about being in different parts of space. Okay, so that is really the diagnostic. If you compute this thing, this is trivial to compute, any program can do it, it's in Dalton, and there are versions of QChem with it, it's in a number of programs. Okay, if you go and compute this quantity, if your overlap drops below about 0.4 for these local functionals, your values are going to be terrible. And this is what we wanted to do. We wanted the user community to have a little simple diagnostic that would give them an error message in the calculation. So that's what we have, that's the same plot. So how do we fix it? As Hiram mentioned yesterday, we need long-range exchange. That's the way to fix this. You can say, well, let's put in 20% exchange. There you go, that's the easy lip. You see things got a little bit better. Okay, this, the errors down here have moved away. You can see you still have unreliable results when your overlap becomes below about 0.3. That's typical for a hybrid functional with about this much exchange. Then we can go and use one of these long-range corrected functionals, as discussed yesterday. You see that. This really is a significant improvement. You know, there are still errors in here, of course. But just take a stepping back and comparing these enormous errors down here for the overlap. Just going away thinking. And it's working. Now for this extreme case of the charge transfer excitation between two molecules, the excitation energy will still collapse to the difference between the orbital energies. But now, of course, as Hiram showed yesterday, for these sorts of functionals, because of the linearity of the energy, the HOMO is close to minus I, the LUMO is close to minus A. So the excitation energy is close to I minus A, which is the right answer. So that's really the background to all of this stuff. Okay, so this was published a while ago. What we've been trying to think of recently are the implications of this for excited state potential energy surfaces. Okay, because when I'm in Durham and I talk to my colleagues, the experimental colleagues, what they really want to do is they want to know about fluorescence. They want to know about the structure of the excited state. They want to know about reactions occurring on an excited state. So they don't just want to know the energy of one geometry, they want a full excited state potential energy surface. And of course we can do this in TD-DFT, we can just compute a ground state surface, and for each geometry add on the excitation energy. And if you add the excitation energy on, you map out an excited state surface. But can you see there is a profound implication based on what I've just said? Because imagine you have a molecule, you have some configuration of the nuclei, and you look at an excitation, and the overlap is quite high between the orbitals. The excitation energy will be reasonably accurate, hopefully. The excited state surface will be accurate. But then walk around the surface, change the nuclear structure. If suddenly the overlap between the orbitals suddenly drops down, which it can do, and I'll show you an example where it does, the vertical excitation will become far too low, the whole excited state surface will collapse. Okay, that clearly has enormous implications for studies for the chemistry. So we looked for a molecule where we would observe this, and we thought we'd just write a paper and try and show this happening. So I had another undergraduate, fourth year project student, and we did some work on this. Same molecule, there it is again, DMABN. Okay, so this is a dual fluorescent molecule, huge amounts in the literature about this. What's useful is Cohn and Hettich had already performed very accurate calculations on this molecule. Okay, so they use the resolution of the identity CC2 method to compute the excited state surfaces as a function of that twist. So that's the one coordinate I'm going to think of. Just twist the molecule and just see what happens. So these are the CC2 numbers. So these are Cohen-Hettig numbers. So straight from Cohen-Hettig, there's no ground state shown on here. This is simply the energy of two excited state surfaces as a function of the twist angle. And they've computed out the RICC2 geometries. Okay, to optimize along those surfaces so they are minimum paths on the surface. So that is what TDDFT should do. Okay, so how well does TDDFT do? Can it actually do this? So let's take the lowest level of approximation, take a GGA, this could be PV, this could be BMIP, this could be any GGA, evaluated at the same geometries, you can play directly with these numbers. These are the overlap values, these aren't the excited state surfaces, these are the overlaps. Okay, so that quantity lambda. For the two excited states, so there's two states, okay, the red curve is a locally excited state, the black curve is an intramolecular charge transfer state. You'll see that as bad terminology. You call 1A and 1B under a C2 symmetry. Okay, so those two states, before you twist the molecule, so when you start off with a 0-degree twist, you see the overlap is quite high in both cases. But as you twist it, look what happens. The overlaps both plunge. As it twists, the overlap plunges completely. And it plunges in both cases, in both states, not just the one which is called charge transfer. So the implications of this will be but on the left-hand side here, on the right-hand side, before you've twisted it away from the, it's not quite plain, but I don't think, forget the CGD. As you move away from that initial geometry, the overlap will drop, the vertical excitations will start to drop, the whole surface should just completely collapse. So let's look at what PVE does. And that is the surface of PVE. So the photochemists, the experimentalists who go and say, I'll do some calculations of PVE, are going to predict complete rubbish for this excited state surface. You see what's happening? It's reasonable on the left. Both the surfaces are reasonable. But as you twist it, they both just collapse towards the ground state. As we would predict, it's terribly simple. I'm not doing anything complicated here. It's very simple. But we wanted the user. There are enormous users, enormous numbers of users who do TDDFT. We wanted some information to give to them as to when things would work and when they would fail. So the black curve should drop to a minimum and go back. It still does. But look how much it drops. Because the minute you start to twist, the vertical excitations just collapse. Even worse is the red curve, which should go through a minimum and up to a maximum. So this is a different excited state. This one starts to drop, and it can't go up. Because the more it twists, the vertical excitation just collapses. The whole surface just collapses. And if you were to say, what is the geometry of the LE state, PV would predict 90-degree rotated state. The answer is 19 degrees. Okay, so it's completely wrong. These are the orbitals involved in the excitations. This is the one involved in the charge transfer. This is the one involved in the locally excited state. These are the dominant ones. There are others. Okay, these are the dominant excitations. And you see the overlaps are quite large. Okay, so the absence of exact exchange in your functional isn't a problem, because you don't need this long-range exchange, because local exchange can treat this little picture. But then I rotate it, so this is at 0, rotate to 90, here you go. The two orbitals at the top look the same. I'll go back to 0, 90. The top orbitals aren't changing. Look at the bottom one. Okay, it flies across the one end. It's localizing, and of course, you look to the chemists and they say, well, this makes complete sense. This is the P orbital on the nitrogen, which interacts with the ring. And I twist it, it can no longer interact. And as a result, the ring, the pi structure of the ring, can't contribute. But that's why the overlap becomes small in both cases. So you might not have predicted both of these states going wrong. They do both go wrong because of this, if this orbital is involved. And if you look at the orbital, if I just take the HOMO and rotate it, as I step through, you see the orbital just firing across one end. The overlap drops, the absence of exact exchange suddenly becomes a catastrophic problem, the vertical excitation energy collapses, the excited state surface collapses, the whole photochemistry collapses as well. But you say, I wouldn't use PVE, I would use B3LIP. So there's the B3 lip numbers, Rapoport and Fischer published essentially the same plots. And they observe this is rather strange, this comes out rather flat. You see what you've got is you've got something intermediate between what we had with PVE and the right answer. It's still too low as you twist it. The overlap, I should say, looks exactly the same for B3 lip. If I plotted the B3 lip overlap, you wouldn't see the difference between PVE. So as you twist it, the overlap drops, the charge transfer state drops too much. It's interesting what happens on the locally excited state because it picks up the minimum. So it's doing quite well. But then unfortunately, as you, the energy starts to go up, it starts to go up. But then it twists just too much, and then the overlap gets too low, the virtual excitation collapses, and you end up with a minimum again. So you'd still predict whether it's a minimum or a global or a local minimum, but no. You get the wrong shape to the surface. So now, of course, I think people are starting to see the way to go beyond this is to use these Coulomb attenuated approximations, which we've seen don't have the same problem as you move, as you vary the degree of charge transfer. So there's CAM B through lip. That's the Coulomb attenuated approximation that we tend to use. And the physics is really very good. If you look at the absolute energy, you say they're a little bit too high, and they are a little bit too high. But in terms of the physics of the twist, physics is correct. If you want to understand walking around potential energy surfaces where the degree of charge transfer varies, these are the sorts of functionals you want to be using rather than those that have far less exact exchange. And Hirao did a study on a similar molecule with his functionals and made some similar observations about the performance. Okay, so that was published at the end of 2009. Okay, so on the referee, when the referee said this, said, okay, this is sort of well known, but it's quite nice to actually put it together into one paper and show it. And there are other examples where people have seen the failure of these charge transfer states. There was an earlier paper by Andreas Droy and Jürgen Plotner. And what they did was they looked at this molecule. This was published maybe a year ago, I don't know exactly when it was. Okay, and at the time, we looked at this and we were doing our work, we looked at this and thought, well, this is very obvious now because clearly when you twist this molecule, you're going to get localization of the orbitals. So we sat down with Andreas and we've got this paper written now. So this is a new paper, it's in press at the moment, it's on the JCTC website, there's a location of the lecture there. But we looked at this and we twisted it. You can see what's going to happen, because before you twist, you end up with orbitals that are reasonably delocalized across the whole system. So you might expect TD, DFT with the conventional functionals to be reasonable. Hopefully now you look at this and you sort of see it in terms of the orbitals. This is what we wanted to do. We wanted the users to do the calculations. Look at the orbitals and say, this is not going to be any good. The physics is missing to describe this. If I twist it, now I get this. And it completely decouples the electronic orbitals. The overlap between the two is going to become small. It's going to break down. If we look at this, this is what we found. So these are some plots from that paper. Unfortunately, in this one, the twist goes from right to left, okay, not left to right. Okay, so the right-hand side here is the plane of geometry. And as you twist it, you move to the left. The overlap is quite high to start, and the overlap tumbles down. And it falls well below our diagnostic. The diagnostic says, oh, once you get below about 0.3, 0.4, you're going to have problems. The reason there are three curves in here is this paper looked at three functionals, one with no exchange, one with 20% exchange, one with 50% exchange. PB, B3 lip, Becker half and half. And the overlaps are rather similar for all three. But look at the errors. These are the errors in the excitation energies compared to couple cluster. This is the one with no exchange, big error. 20% exchange, smaller error. 50% exchange, even smaller error. But of course, those sorts of functionals, like half and half, are not global functionals, not useful for everything, but they're very good in these situations where you need long range exchange. Obviously, they are. These are the surfaces, there's a lot of information here, not very good quality, I'm sorry, but the thing to watch really is this state, okay? This is the couple cluster results, this is the first singlet excited state, and as you twist it, the energy should go up. If you use a local functional, twist it, the energy actually goes down. Okay, so it predicts the minimum with the BP86 theory, the minimum is at twisted geometry, whereas in reality, in couple cluster theory, it's not. Okay, the energy's actually gone up. B3 lip, you'll see it's reasonably flat. Half and half, you see it does correctly go up. So the bottom line, if you're interested in computing excited state surfaces, you have to be very, very careful about how much exchange you use, and you have to understand that things are going to break completely if you don't have enough in regions where the overlap drops. And if I do CAM B3 lip, I'm afraid the scale is slightly different on the two. Maybe you can see the picture of the first excited state. Is exactly the right shape. Okay, so the physics of the excited states is described correctly. that's really what we've been doing, thinking about twists. I'm going to come back to a twist at the end of the, talk again. But the second thing I said I wanted to talk about was the character of the excitations. This is something we've only started thinking about recently. And what got us to think about this was this paper in the literature. So this was published last year. And they looked at retinal. This is a protonated shift-based retinal. There's retinal there. And they computed the TV-DFT excitation energies, compared them with a couple cluster, and it worked very well. For the lowest two or three states, I think. Then they did something interesting. If you look at this pair of carbons here, this is what they did. They added a couple of hydrogens. So I step back, retinal, and they just added extra hydrogen. They just hydrogenated it across that bond. And when they did the calculations on the hydrogenated system, they were interested in effects of the chain of the conjugation length. They suddenly found that for one of the states, TDDFT, with a conventional functional worked very well, but with the other two excited states, it was failing miserably. It was coming out far too low. And now you can look at this and sort of say, we understand this now, because in this case, before I hydrogenate it, the orbitals are all going to be nicely delocalized. They're going to delocalize from the chain across onto the ring. And if you do the calculations and look at it, they are. The overlap's high, lambda's about 0.7. So there's no reason that things should be really bad. But the minute you go and hydrogenate it, you break the conjugation, you're suddenly going to get orbitals on the chain and orbitals on the ring, and that's when things go bad. So it's, again, it's sort of obvious looking at it now from this perspective. This is what we've been trying to do, to just promote this perspective of looking at the calculations. So here it is. This was published in PCCP at the start of the year. So this is for the system after it's been hydrogenated. So there's three excited states. Okay, these are the B3 lip vertical excitation energy, so those first three numbers, 1.53, 3.05, 3.25, and these are their reference couple cluster values. And you see for the second excitation, it nails it. But for the first and the third, it's hopeless. It's more than an EV out. And what's also interesting is look at the oscillator strengths in parentheses. This is a measure of the intensity of the transition. This is where we're coming into the character. It's the wrong way around compared to couple cluster. This is low, and this is high, but this is high. This is low. So the physics is completely wrong when you do this. And we can understand now exactly why this is. Because if we look at the overlaps, so the B3 lip calculation, these are the overlap values. You see for the middle excitation, the overlap is quite high. The diagnostic would say once you get to about 0.3, be careful. But for the other two, you can see you're basically in that be careful region. So you could have predicted this. You do the calculations, you would predict this failure. Let me say here that the diagnostic test says if the overlap is small, the error will be large. It does not imply if the overlap is large, the error is small. Okay, because I've seen a number of papers coming out, people are saying, well, the overlap's large, therefore it's going to work. Okay, you can never be sure that it's actually going to work. And there are counterexamples. You have to dream them in your head what they're going to look like. What the test says is if the overlap is small, the error is large. It doesn't say if the overlap is large, the error is small. Okay, so when people do this. Okay, so the error should be large for the first and the third. If you look at the orbitals involved, these are these localized orbitals now. The first excitation corresponds to essentially this transition. Okay, so you take an electron from the ring, move it to the chain. The third one, take it from the ring, move it to the chain. But the second one, take it from the chain and move it to the chain. So these two are the problematic ones. They're the ones with the low overlaps. That's the reason things go bad when you do conventional functions. You say, well, okay, I've learned now I shouldn't do B3 lip for these things. I should be using one of these long-range corrected or Coulomb attenuated functionals, call them what you will. There's the CAM B3 lip numbers. 2.6, 2.8, 3, 3.2, 4.4, 4.7. It's always a little bit too high. Exchange always pushes excitation energies up. But the problem is now solved, if you like this. It's suddenly working equally well for all three excitations. The most interesting thing, and we almost missed this when we did the study, is look at the oscillator strengths. They suddenly switch back around again. Okay, so the physics is right in here. Now this is now high-low compared to our reference. And to understand that, you've got to think a little bit more about the character of the excitations. So I'll tell you here now that for B3 lip, that first excitation really is that transition. You look at it, there's nothing else in there. Okay, that really completely dominates it. And an excitation of that manner must have a small oscillator strength. Think about the expression of the oscillator strengths, the dipole matrix elements. It must be zero when you have orbitals at different parts of space. That's why the oxidative strength is small. I said that the fluid excitation looks like this. It does look mainly like that, but it's got a bit of this in it. And it has enough of this character in there to increase the intensity. And that's what's affecting the oscillator strength. And that makes sense, I think, because the second and the third excitations are close in energy. So there will be a mixing between them, whereas the first excitation is out on its own. Okay, so if you do a calculation and your excited state energy is completely wrong, in all likelihood, the character of the excitation will be wrong. Again, it's obvious, but it's important to highlight it. And when I go into CAM B3-lip instead, when I do CAM B3-lip, what happens? Now it's this third excitation, which is purely that. It doesn't mix with that anymore. It really is just that. So the oscillator strength is small. But the first excitation is dominated by this, but it's got a little bit of this character. So the character of the excitation is changing. And it makes sense again, because now it's the first two excitations that are close in energy. So you expect this mixing. The third excitation now is out on its own, so it doesn't mix. Okay, so that's the character of the excitations. This isn't the way people normally think about the charge transfer problem. So I think it's important to highlight that. In the last few slides, let me just show you some numbers, which is very recent, only from last week, where we tried to basically bring these two ideas together, the idea of twist and the idea of the character. Okay, so here's another model molecule. It's a little bit like DNA again, sort of donor and acceptor, some conjugated system in between, and we've twisted. So these are now three excited states. So these are the lambda values, these are the overlap values as a function of the twist, the lowest three excitations. Blue is the lowest excitation, red is the next lowest, green is the next lowest, along the twist. And you start to see some interesting things in here. You look at this and you say, well, look at the red. The overlap for the red excitation becomes the green one. And the red excitation clearly becomes the green one. And you say, it looks like an avoided crossing, and it is an avoided crossing. Look at the states, because we have no symmetry now. Remember last time we had symmetry, we had C2 symmetry as we twisted DNA again. We don't have that anymore. No symmetry now upon this twist except at the extreme 0 and 90 degrees. So there's an avoided crossing. It looks as if they're degenerate, but if you look closely, they don't cross. But if you look at the red, it becomes green. The red becomes green. Okay, because if you avoid a cross, it comes down here. So the character of the states changes at the avoided crossing. And you see that when you go and look at the overlap. You say, well, okay, it's quite nice, but I knew that from the energy. I didn't need to compute the overlap to see that. Okay, what else is interesting in here? The lowest excited state, the overlap just drops. And it drops here to a region where it should be starting to fail. If you look at the orbitals involved, that is what the orbitals look like at 90 degrees. It looks just like DNA again. It's the same excitation. This is why we did this molecule, because you like DNA again. Okay, as you go and twist it, you end up with a very low overlap because the p orbital is localized on one end and can't interact with the ring. Okay, so you look at this and you say, okay, so based on all this overlap business, you might expect the blue curve to be very bad over here. Okay, as it twists, the blue curve should go wrong. So you'd expect CAM B3-lip, or one of these attenuated functionals, to give you something very different when you twist it. And this is what you get. And the blue curve looks exactly the same. Okay, because you'd expect, as you twist this, you'd expect that this blue curve to be much higher in energy on the right-hand side, because there's a charge transfer problem on the left that won't be there on the right. It would be far less significant on the right. Notice also the avoided crossing in here is larger. Okay, the interaction between them, I think that's because of the exchange. So we looked at this and we got confused by this. And then we got even more confused for a while. But when you look at the overlap values, you see some very interesting things, which we didn't expect to see. The two things I want to show you, the general structure is the same, isn't it? The red goes up, green, up, down, the blue across the top. Two things I want to point out, these strange features, this drop. So when my PhD student came up, I said, you plotted the wrong thing. There's no way there's a character. There's no way anything is in there. Because if you walk along the blue curve, it's completely smooth. Nothing changes whatsoever. But the character of the excitation is doing something strange at that point. And even more interestingly, although the blue character suddenly lowers its overlap value, the red one suddenly gains its value. There's no interaction, nothing happening down here. There's no change in the energy curve. And what that actually is interesting, is it is a and avoided crossing in the orbital energies. So in the one electron space, the Rydberg orbital has an avoided crossing with another orbital. Now at the point where there's an avoided crossing, suddenly the character of the excitation changes. It starts mixing in some Rydberg that wasn't there before. And that's why the red curve, which wasn't the Rydberg, suddenly gains Rydberg. The Rydberg has a low overlap. So the blue one, which wasn't Rydberg, gains Rydberg character. So it drops. The overlap is small for a Rydberg excitation. The red plot, which was a Rydberg, suddenly gains non-Rydberg character. You don't see it in here. So what we're starting to see is there's actually a lot of information content in this overlap that you don't necessarily see just looking at the energies. The real reason for putting this up is not to look at that word, I think it's interesting that it's in there. Look what happens with the blue curve. The blue curve, the overlap drops. The blue curve, the overlap goes up. So at the right-hand point, even though these two curves look exactly the same, this has a low overlap excitation at 90 degrees, which is this. The other one has a high overlap excitation, which is this. So it's a different pair of orbitals. So you've got this rather strange situation that you start off on the left before you twist it, and the orbitals are the same. Take my word for it, it's the same excitation and it involves the same pair of orbitals. But as you go and twist it, by the time you get to the right-hand side, it's changed its character. And I've learned, you know, when I talk to the experimental chemists, they want to know about the character of the excitation. They want to know what the electrons are doing, how the electrons are redistributing. Okay, the character is totally different on the right-hand side. It involves a different pair of orbitals. The top orbital is the same, it's excited on a different orbital. So the charge transfer error is showing in here, but it's not showing in the energy. The energy has actually come out essentially the same, but the charge transfer error has come out in the character of the excitation. Okay, let me just show you what I think is happening here. Okay, if you imagine this is the energy for this pair, for this excitation, this is the energy, there's like diabatic curves for the bottom one. In CAM, these two cross over. Well, they don't cross, not allowed to cross, there's an avoided crossing, so the character changes, and you end up with the high overlap at the bottom and the low overlap at the top. Then you go and say, what would PBE do? PBE would probably give me the same curve for this high overlap state. Okay, which I've drawn there. But for the low overlap state, it's not going to go up in energy, it's probably just going to tumble down here somewhere because it's too low. So the charge transfer error is in there, but now there's no avoided crossing. And because there's no avoided crossing, the character just stays the same across the bottom, so you end up with a different excitation. That's an entirely schematic picture, it's the way we understand what's going on. It's not a very rigorous way of doing it. The main thing to take away there is that when you go and do these calculations, it's not always just the energy that's wrong. Sometimes the energy looks right. And that's in this case because of the interaction with other states. The character is totally different. Okay, I should conclude. So it's important to understand. We do understand it in terms of long-range exchange. Predict, we can predict failures. You never predict something will work in DFT. You can predict things will fail if you understand the physics that's wrong. And fix it. And we know that in many cases, not all, as Evgeny said, you can fix this charge transfer underestimation. And I think the overlap analysis is very simple. That's not the best way to do it. If you look at the expression for lambda, it was done extremely simply. We wanted to do it with an undergrad during a 12-week project or a 16-week project. Okay, so there are better ways of doing it, but it captures the physics. And the diagnostic test then, it is easy to put into programs, and it's useful, I think, for the user community. Attenuation fixes the problem. We thought about surfaces. I said bigger implies TBDFT. You could look at this and say, why am I worrying about DNA again? I did RICC2. I don't need TBDFT. But let's make the molecule bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you can't do RICC2. And the TBDFT observations will become very important. Okay, and at the end then we thought some very recent stuff, thinking about the character of the excitations and also the information content of lambda. I don't know how useful that is. You certainly see things in the overlap in this lambda quantity. You don't know we're actually in there by looking simply at the energy, so it's quite useful. I should acknowledge the people who did all the work. Michael and Austin were PhD students. Michael is now a postdoc with me. Peter Benfield and Paul Williams were undergraduate students at Durham. Gareth Williams is on the staff at Durham, who worked with us on twisting DMADN. Chuka Hendaka was visiting for a year and worked with us on the original diagnostic work, and then our recent work with Andreas Roy and Jürgen Tolkner on the PY101 molecule. I'm not sure if I said what the molecule was, but yellow. 101. And thank you, ESRC, for support, and thank you for your attention.
very much. And about to talk about this dynamic that I hope we'll find its way into most programs. I myself have found it quite useful. We now have time for a few questions.
I have a question about this molecule with two nitrogens, which is similar to azabenzene.
I
was wondering what type of the bond between these two nitrogens. Is it double bond in the ground state?
I forget precisely. If you looked at the orbitals, I think you can understand it in terms of what happens with the barrier. The barrier is higher in the excited state. So you're excited, so the LUMO is a bonding. So the LUMO is a bonding orbital. If you think about it in terms of the bonding and forming.
So there is no double bonding in the ground state?
I always do these calculations as a theoretical chemist. I put the nuclei in, add the electrons, and I haven't looked at the orbital. Please answer the orbital.
As a former organic chemist, I can tell you it's a dihydrazone, and it's derived from hydrazine, so we have simple between two nitrogens and double bonds to CH groups.
This is all related to the hydrogen. It's the proton transfer that you're interested in. So I'm not a chemist. It's the proton transfer that you're actually interested in.
Thank you.
I have a question for the compound before. You showed the amino groups. The amino group and the dimethyl amino group. And then you showed the rotational amino group.
Yes.
Does the amino group remain planar?
Those calculations, the geometry in here was obtained from the CC2 calculations.
Completely optimized on this restriction of planarity at the amino group.
There is a restriction in there that is under C2 symmetry. At the point where you get to 90 degrees, it has C2V symmetry, but it's not actually the minimum.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly
it. It becomes parallel.
Yes, right.
That would affect the overlap. That might be important for your overlap dependent.
There's actually a slide that I don't think I have in here. And if you look at the CT plane at 90 degrees, when it twists out, it actually comes out of the plane. It does bend up. But you can understand entirely because what happens is a couple cluster predicts that the energy drops as it comes out of the plane. PBE predicts it doesn't because the overlap is very low. It's exactly as you're saying. As you go to B3 lip, it predicts that the energy difference gets smaller. When you get to CAM, it doesn't quite switch over. But it's understanding that it's going to be a little bit more. Sorry, the slide missing. Yeah. It's in the paper.
Okay, I think it's time to move on to keep the schedule. Let's thank the speaker again.